The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
It's been another busy news week, and we like to review the major stories of the week here on the Black Information Network. Today, we are joined by Black Information Network news anchors Morgan Wood and Bree Wood to discuss this week's major stories. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I'm your host, Ramses Ja. All right, Morgan, welcome back to the show. How have you been since we last spoke?
Man, things are great. Glad to be back, Ramses.
All right. And Bree, always wonderful time when you're on the show as well. How have you been?
Thank you. Hello. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Fantastic. And I know we got a lot to cover today, too. So let's get right to it. First up, you know what? Even when he's not in a courtroom fighting the numerous cases against him, Donald Trump still seems to find a way to make headlines. This week was no different as the former president decided to compare himself to an iconic Black leader for the second time. Bree, let's start with you. Tell us more on this story, and then Morgan, we're going to come to you next.
Yeah, I did cover this in our national news as well. And it's just very interesting, his perspective on why he would bring up Mandela. So, of course, former President Donald Trump, again, drawing a comparison between himself and anti-apartheid activist, statesman, and the first president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela, who is iconic, by the way. And the comments were made on April 6th, and he suggested, Trump, I'm talking about, that he wouldn't mind going to jail for violating a gag order in his upcoming New York hush money trial. So this post was made on his personal platform, Truth Social, and he stated, quote, I will gladly become a modern day Nelson Mandela. It will be my great honor, end quote. So if you know, most of us know Mandela spent 27 years in prison, but his incarceration was a result of his commitment to fighting against racial segregation and injustice happening in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And so Mandela was released in 1990, and that was a big turning point in South Africa's history, leading to the negotiations that ended apartheid. So it's not quite the same thing as the circumstances Donald Trump is dealing with. But as you mentioned, this is not the first time he's made a parallel between him and Mandela.
Yeah.
In October of 2023, he did link himself to Mandela while discussing all of the lawsuits that he has going on right now. So the context for this latest remark, it's lying in the accusations against Trump for his alleged faking documents to conceal some hush money that he made, allegedly, payments to an adult film star named Stormy Daniels, who's been doing her own press run. I've even seen her on The View. I think she's released a book, and it's just weeks before the 2016 election that she says this incident happened with former President Trump. Mm-hmm. So he's currently facing 34 counts of falsifying business documents, and his trial is scheduled to begin really soon on April 15th.
Yeah,
so basically, he's just saying he's, you know, being persecuted in the press for something that he claims never happened.
Sure. Morgan, let's get your thoughts.
Yes, I absolutely agree with what Bree is saying. There's a major difference between a Mandela and
a
Trump
few, yeah.
in terms of the charges there. But all jokes aside, Trump will be the very first U.S. president facing criminal charges. So we are definitely in an unprecedented time. And I honestly think the whole world will be watching how our legal system handles this situation. And to your point, Bree, his trial is set to begin on Monday, April 15th, ironically enough, tax day. This happens, or this comes just as a New York appellate court judge has denied Trump and his legal team three times within 3 days to their attempt to push the trial back. The only way I see him getting out of this right now is if he, you know, fires his legal team and, you know, again, requests for, you know, more time to prepare. But other than that, it's really, you know, grab your popcorn and let's see what happens. And then I doubt 27 years from now, we'll be saying this, you know, we'll be lining Mandela up with Trump. So just to say that, you know, it doesn't compare at all.
Yeah, not at all. Now, there is something to be said, and this in no way is a defense of Donald Trump. I would never do that. But I have to be fair. I have to say that our idea of criminal behavior and activity is really influenced by our culture, politics, you know, our experiences and the part of the world in which we live. Right. And that, again, shapes laws. And, you know, Donald Trump is on trial for it's a criminal trial this time, in addition to all of the civil stuff and all the rest of that. But this is a criminal trial. So, again, our laws are dictated and defined by, you know, culture, since, you know, that sort of thing. And Nelson Mandela was a criminal, too, technically speaking. Indeed, I think it's stated quite often that he wasn't removed from the U.S. terrorist list until 2013. And I think that was just before his 90th birthday. Right. So this, you know, fantastic, phenomenal world leader, this celebrated individual, this champion of freedom was still on the U.S. terrorist watch list as an 89-year-old man, almost 90-year-old man. Right. So technically speaking, criminality is criminality. Right. But morality, morals, I think, is where you find the biggest distinction between Nelson Mandela and Donald Trump, which is why this is a headline in the first place, because we can look at Nelson Mandela and say, OK, technically that he qualified as a criminal. You know, Martin Luther King famously has been arrested a bunch of times, you know, for criminal activity. A speeding ticket is criminal activity, you know, technically. But I think that those of us that look at this headline and say and hold our head and say not again, we are looking at the morality of both of these men. And when you look at the morality of both of these men, then you realize that there's no comparison. Donald Trump famously is an immoral human being. But almost misspoke there, but he's famously an immoral person. He's a very selfish person, and he has harmed lots of people.
The man is selling Bibles. Come on,
yeah, and there's no bottom, this man. And then Nelson Mandela, for him to compare himself to Nelson Mandela, who is someone that we certainly put right next to sainthood. You know what I mean? It feels
I think
like
he was
a
just trying to make it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You're right. If you were getting ready to say it, it might feel like a slap in the face. And most definitely it does if you know what Mandela was imprisoned
for.
But
exactly.
I think he is drawing the parallel based on the fact that he feels Mandela was wrongly imprisoned. So if he is convicted, he will be wrongly imprisoned. So I understand what he's trying to do, but he's not wording it the right way for most people to get that understanding of it unless they're following everything.
Sure.
And that's actually a tactic that his legal team is actually looking for in the jury. You know, they want African-Americans on, young African-Americans on the jury, because they feel as though Trump relates to that essential, that struggle of being wrongfully accused about things
and even discriminated against as a rich white man. That's basically it. Like, even me, yes, they are coming for me. So I relate. That's what he's doing.
Boy, you know, the thing, you know, it's very simple for Donald Trump. If he followed the instructions of the court, stop tweeting about people's family members, and he took a modicum of accountability for his actions, you know, then his outcomes would be very different. For me, it doesn't matter how much accountability, how many apologies, how much I obey the court. If that judge is going to sentence me and put me under the jail, that's just kind of how it goes. And so a rich white man in America is, you know, him trying, he's really stretching to make those connections again to Mandela and to Black America and so forth. Like, we somehow have a connected experience. And the fact of the matter is that he's a grifter. And, you know, this is probably another example of him doing just that. But that's enough attention for him for today. Moving on. In Baltimore, civil rights groups are calling for the collapsed Baltimore Bridge to be renamed, stating that the bridge was named after a racist slave owner. Morgan, you cover the Baltimore market for the Black Information Network, so we're going to start with you this time. Give us more on the story, and then Bree, naturally, we're going to come to you next.
So, yes, a few weeks back, the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed after a ship container slammed into one of the pillars of the bridge. Now, the caucus of African-American leaders voted to recommend changing the name of the bridge because it honors a man, Francis Scott Key, who owned slaves. The Baltimore Banner reports that the group is calling on Maryland Governor Wes Moore and the Maryland General Assembly to rename the bridge in honor of late Congressman Perrin Mitchell, who is the first African-American elected to the U.S. House from Maryland. Now, when they asked Governor Moore about this, he said right now he's focused on recovery and salvage efforts at the collapse site, reopening the shipping channel and rebuilding the structure. President Biden has also pledged that the federal government will pick up the cost of rebuilding the collapsed Key Bridge. And there has been bipartisan response to this tragic incident. Now, as a longtime Marylander, we know and recognize Francis Scott Key for writing the poem, that Star Spangled Banner, which eventually turned into our U.S. national anthem. So I will give him credit for that. But as you mentioned, he was a slave owner. And frankly, while we're in a time of fixing that which has been divisive, I think renaming the bridge is spot on. It's one of many structures in Maryland with Francis Scott Key's name on it, including elementary, middle, high schools. There's a Key Highway. There's monuments honoring him. There's still the Francis Scott Key Memorial Bridge connecting D.C. to Northern Virginia. So renaming this particular bridge should not be out of the question. But I am also compelled to choose a name that may actually speak. Now, y'all ain't going to want to hear this because we at the Black Information Network. But I'm actually compelled to think that we should choose a name that speaks to the Latino brothers who lost their lives working on that bridge.
I
may not want to hear that, but I'm going to say if there's a name change to be made, it should be to honor the six workers who died in that.
We should do something with that. We should do something with
that. That's a good point.
Bree, why don't you jump in here? I'll add something there.
Well, you know, piggybacking off of Morgan, that is something most definitely that I feel would be progressive. I think it would be respectful because those were workers who are working in the wee hours of the night. That could have been a much more tragic situation. But even with the death of those people, it's still tragic. And they lost their lives doing their jobs. They went to work not knowing that was going to be their last day at work. Mm-hmm. So it's not out of the question to consider that and consider their families and the loved ones who are mourning their deaths while we're talking about the bridge. We cannot forget the victims, which I think is very important, Morgan. So that's a solid point. Also, the reaction from the public and officials has been mixed. Some support the change of possibly renaming the bridge, recognizing that it is important to address historical figures with problematic pasts, but others are viewing the renaming as an unnecessary erasure of history. And so we've seen this across other states where monuments have been renamed, buildings have been renamed, or monuments have been torn down because they were idolizing figures in history that were either racist or owned slaves. And I don't know. Some people think that history is history, good or bad, and it shouldn't be touched. So again, Governor Wes Moore, he indicated that while the immediate focus is on the bridge's collapse and the aftermath, he said there will be a time for discussions about renaming it. So I think that they're going to consider it. But it's very interesting to see what they would choose and who they would choose to put that to whose name they would choose to put on that bridge. So that debate is just highlighting these ongoing conversations that are happening about how to reconcile historical legacies with our contemporary values, because so much has changed and it could be complex. And you're weighing the significance of these figures against their actions and their personal beliefs that are considered unacceptable today. So the outcome of the discussion will likely have a lasting implication for Baltimore residents and the entire state.
I mean, let the record show right now where Baltimore has a Black mayor and Maryland has a Black governor. So, you know, renaming the we're not at a loss for Francis Scott Key things named around here. So it's
OK. That's good to know. And you know what? Let me add to that. You know, Francis Scott Key. When I say this, I know that a lot of our listeners are going to be like, oh, yeah, I remember that. But, you know, the actual Star Spangled Banner has like racist lyrics in it, too. There's a part of the song that says no refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of night. Oh, sorry, from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave, and the Star Spangled Banner in triumph doth wave, or the land of the free and the home of the brave. And I'm going to pull a little bit from the Washington Post here. These lyrics are a clear reference to the Colonel Marines, according to Jefferson Morley. They are clearly meant to scorn and threaten the African Americans who took the British up on their offer to, if you fight for the British side of things, we'll get you your freedom, right? And so these lyrics were kind of like mocking those people that were fighting for their freedom while America was fighting for its freedom. Right. And so even his most celebrated work, and the thing that we all know him for, was kind of drenched in racist ideology and energy. Right. So when
that's
I
why
learned
we don't
that,
sing that part, they stopped singing that part. And that's why boycott.
And the truth is, it took a long time for it took about 100 years for this to become our national anthem, partly because of that.
Yes. And a lot of people boycotted even singing it. And I'm talking about a lot of Black people because of that history and the fact that part is not sung. That part was cut from what we know to be today. But wasn't that also a catalyst for the Black national anthem being something that Black people would say, maybe not instead of, but in addition to the Star Spangled Banner?
Exactly. So, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So in any event, you know, this kind of reminds me of like when people were making a big deal out of Kaepernick kneeling and, you know, the athletes protesting the national anthem and really protesting during the national anthem, protesting police brutality, because that's really what it was. They were protesting during national, they weren't protesting the national anthem, but you know, all these conversations started to come about. And then of course we had to have a critical examination of the national anthem itself, because people were trying to say all these things about how this country is so good to Black people and blah blah blah. And you know, I think that the idea of kind of renaming the bridge is, I mean, we're always going to know who Francis Scott Key is. Other countries change their national anthems all the time, especially when they turn over a new leaf or they acknowledge, you know, some things in their history that are reflected in their anthems or whatever. Germany comes to mind. The United States is kind of stubborn, a stubborn bully, new kid on the block. And so I don't see us changing the national anthem. But as you mentioned, we have a Black mayor and Black governor in Maryland, so we might be able to change the name of a bridge. You know, Francis Scott Key's name will stay on the anthem as long as it's the anthem here. But renaming that bridge after our after a prominent Latin American figure, I think I love that idea. Recently, on Civic Cypher, I did a segment dedicated to the Latino workers that all lost their lives on that bridge. And during that segment, I really spoke to how there's this narrative, certainly on the right, that, you know, these people are destroying this country. And I think those individuals that gave their lives helping build
it,
indeed, this country, flies in the face of that. And, you know, it certainly reflects my reality growing up in California and in Phoenix and Arizona. You know, I'm surrounded. This all used to be Mexico. So these people lived here before there was America. Right. And, you know, the people that do come here to work and go back and people that send money back, it's just kind of a part of everybody gets along great, you know. And so in other parts of the country where they're not so closely related and they look at their pocketbooks and the price of food and they are like, well, everything feels worse, so it must be Biden and the immigrants. And they don't really know the role that these people play in our society. I think renaming a bridge could certainly start to round a corner and provide a bit of a defense for our Latino brothers and sisters. And I feel that we're going to get where we're ultimately going to get together. We'll get there a lot faster together. And so I really love that.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes. And switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BIN today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BIN.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Idea. Black Information Network news anchors Morgan Wood and Bree Wood are here with us discussing the week's major stories. All right, get ready, y'all. Conservative news host Megyn Kelly raised some eyebrows recently after she offered her thoughts on Kamala Harris and Michelle Obama's praise for Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter album. Bree, let's start with you again. Share some insights with the story with our listeners, and then Morgan, we're going to get your thoughts afterwards.
Good old Megyn Kelly. Never a dull moment with her, huh? She's a conservative news host, and she recently expressed her views on Vice President Kamala Harris and the former First Lady, Michelle Obama, and their praise for Beyoncé's album. It's called Cowboy Carter, if you hadn't heard. And I personally really like it. So Kelly seemed to question the need to redefine the country music genre. And she appeared skeptical of the high level of acclaim that Beyoncé is receiving whenever she releases new work, basically saying that it's a bandwagon type thing. And she discussed these opinions on her show. It's called The Megyn Kelly Show, and it's on the Triumph channel on SiriusXM. And she also read out social media responses from the aforementioned Vice President Harris and Mrs. Obama, who had commended Beyonce publicly for highlighting the Black community's early influence in country music throughout her album. Specifically, an artist by the name of Linda Martell, who's now 82 years old. She was a pioneering country music artist that many people had never even heard of. And so Beyonce gave her flowers right on that album. And as for commentary, Michelle Obama expressed her admiration on X and Instagram for Cowboy Carter. She said that Beyonce is a record breaker and history maker, and she highlighted the album's cultural impact. She also used the opportunity to encourage people to vote, and she referenced a song on the album called Yaya, and it's used to inspire action or issues like equal pay, racial justice, and even reproductive health care and climate change. And also on X, formerly Twitter, Vice President Kamala Harris praised Beyonce as well. She stated, quote, "Thank you for reminding us to never feel confined to other people's perspective of what our lane is. You have redefined a genre and reclaimed country music's Black roots. Your music continues to inspire us all," end quote. So as usual, Megyn Kelly's comments have sparked some discussion and debate online, and varying reactions from the public and the media as well. It's important to note that even with all this discussion, Beyonce has said from the very beginning that Cowboy Carter is not a country album. People keep trying to say, especially certain people in the country music industry I've heard, and country music fans who know no better, keep trying to say, oh, well, what is she doing? She's that her. It's trash. That's not what country sounds like. I've heard criticism of her Jolene cover, which Dolly Parton blessed, okay, and wanted her to do. And she, of course, tweaked it and made it her song, but it still is true to the essence of the song. Mm-hmm. But she said it's not a country album. She said it's a Beyonce album. And Ooh. That means she's a genre bender, and she's earned the right to do whatever she wants musically whenever she wants. So she basically said, whatever. She's basically said to the country music industry, I see you, I see the criticism, and I don't care. This is a Beyonce album, and I'll do what I want to, not to mention putting on other Black country artists that many people didn't even know were out here doing the music, and they've been doing it. Black people didn't just start coming out the woodwork with country.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's been a lot, but Beyonce was very clear, and it's obvious nobody is really listening to what she's saying because they keep trying to say this isn't country. Well, she didn't do it for you, and she didn't do it to be labeled country, but she is getting that country music play because she's Beyonce.
That way. Mm-hmm. Morgan, let's hear from you.
Yeah, speaking of country music play, Billboard, after she released the album, since y'all so mad about it, 21 songs have made it to the Billboard Hot 100, which brought her tally of Hot 100 singles from 85 to 106, okay, making her amongst 17 artists who have managed to land 100 songs on the chart. And she's in 13th. Other artists on the chart include her husband, Jay-Z, Drake, Future, Elvis, Justin Bieber, just to give you insight. Not only that, this album is providing a little bit of generational wealth because their daughter, Rumi Carter, broke her sister, Blue Ivy's chart record for being the youngest at 6 years old, youngest female artist ever to appear on a Billboard Hot 100 chart. So, and that's based off of her song, Beyonce's song Protector, which is also featured on that Cowboy Carter album. I'm not really sure what's going on here. I'll just put it out there that I know that there are some Black farmers, some Black rural residents that have long time listened to country, whether it be White, Black, Garth Brooks, Brooks and Dunn, Florida Georgia Line, Puddin', a.k.a. K. Michelle, Chapel Heart, Kane Brown, Darius Rucker. And of course, we know Mickey Guyton because she killed that that Star Spangled Banner for the Super Bowl not too long ago. But yeah, like we're not new to this. So I'm not sure why Megyn Kelly feels the need to, first of all, nobody was talking to you.
Thank you.
The conversation was definitely, giving flowers at a cookout that kind of you weren't invited to. So your comment is unnecessary. That's kind of how I feel about that one. We're going to continue to celebrate over here with our cowboy. And I love to see it. I mean, even Marlon Wayans, he's posted recently. He got a cowboy hat on, some cowboy boots. And he said, no broke backs over here. But it, just the emergence of us taking on all of what country music kind of has, you know, the lion dances, which we're no stranger to. Hello. The cha-cha slide, the booty call, the electric slide. These are all line dances. So what's the difference? We throw some cowboy hats on, some boots on, and, you know, we taking up space. That's what it boils down to. And y'all mad about it.
Yeah. You know, the reason why I grew my afro when I was in college is because I was going to take up space with as much blackness as I could. I like that.
I love it.
Still doing it.
Yeah.
So, first off, if you don't know, country music, like basically every other genre of music from this country, and trace its roots to a slave field. So I reckon, and scholars reckon, country music to be black music. Not any different with blues, rock and roll, jazz, basically any type of music that this country creates and exports, that's black music. So as far as Megyn Kelly is concerned, you know, nobody's saying anything that is not factual. Additionally, I think to your point, you can't really argue with number one. So your opinion is just, you just bumping your gums at this point, because it's number one. The people have spoken, right? But the thing that I find the most troubling, the most challenging to accept from her, most hypocritical, and I'm going to read this exactly. I'll try my best because she's got some expletives in here. But it goes, quote, "You have to be this bad B word who's threatening. Effing A, you mess with my man." And it's, to me, it's a turnoff. Now watch what I'm about to say, because this is still her quote. "The true power move is not to worry and not to have to worry. But Beyonce couldn't quite get there. You don't have to tell your story." So I would argue that Megyn Kelly take her own advice. Indeed, while she's criticizing the very woman we're discussing today, "You don't have to worry. The true power move is to not worry.
How about
you? Don't have to tell your story."
Right.
You can't argue with number one anyway. So you just look like a hater with no basis. There's no factual basis. This is black music.
Lock it.
Right.
Exactly.
So really, what else is there to talk about? Again, you're just bumping your gums. You're showing your true colors. You're showing how racist you really are.
Which is why she lost her daytime talk show. Let's not forget that. And it's been replaced by Tamron Hall.
There you go. There you go. Or, and let me, I want to add this one more thing before we move on. If you are this angry about Beyonce and you feel like you need to get that off, right? And it's going to be, you should know that we're going to view it as being racist, because it is, plain and simple, right? This is a celebration. We're not hurting anybody's feelings, and there's a factual basis for it all. Mm-hmm. But what I call into question is your journalistic integrity, capacity, capability, quality. If you don't know this stuff on your own, because there is no argument to be had, and the fact that you're making one up, again, reinforces the fact that you're trying to create static where none exists. And to me, the only basis for that, the only logical conclusion, is that this is rooted in racism. And I'll leave that right there. All right. Last up, I know this is going to be a little funny, but, you know, Black Twitter and former cast members alike are speaking out on the animated remake of the classic TV series Good Times. Morgan, you and Bree both cover entertainment news for the Black Information Network, but we're going to start with you first. Let's get your take on the story, and then Bree, we're going to get your thoughts afterward.
Yeah, so Netflix is launching an animated remake of the classic TV series Good Times, and the former cast has some mixed emotions, I guess I will say.
Yeah.
Show comes out on April 12th with Stephen Curry and Seth MacFarlane as the executive producers, Renata Shepherd as the showrunner. And I personally like the fact that Seth MacFarlane is on this show because he's done Family Guy. He's familiar. He's done American Dad. So he's he's done The Cleveland Show. Mm-hmm. So he's familiar with this type of satire where you just go in on all types of people. Also, the voice features a cast, J.B. Smooth, Yvette Nicole Brown, Jay Farrow, Marseille Martin, and Gerald Slink Johnson, who also play Black Jesus. So these characters, these voices are not strangers to hard topics, is what I'm essentially getting at. So I personally am looking forward to just watching and seeing type of thing. Yvette Nicole Brown. She did say the show is edgier. It's more irreverent than Good Times from Our Childhood, but it's still a show about family fighting the system and working to make things better despite where you start out in the world. And that 100% lines up with her values. Mm-hmm. The sad part about this is that Good Times came out in when? Oh, I don't have that. Sorry.
1970, if I'm not mistaken.
So the fact that we are still dealing with this and we've had to revamp it in a way.
It was 74.
74 to be exact. So the fact that we've had to revamp this in a way that speaks to today's millennial, which, you know, I might have been watching this show as a child. Now I'm watching it as an adult. Shows how much we may have not made as much progress as we think we have. Mm-hmm. So on a personal note, I'm just kind of on the sit back and watch. The former cast members, I believe, Bernadette Stannis, who played Bernadette Stannis, who played
Thelma.
Thelma, thank you. Thelma, yeah. And of course, there's mixed emotions from the former cast. They're saying that they have small roles in this upcoming series. But the gist of the Good Times series, this new animated series, is supposedly the same while also using the family name of Evans. So,
yeah. All right. Bree, let's get your thoughts.
And it's interesting, the word progressive, you used that and was speaking about Yvette Nicole Brown and Miss Bernadette Stannis, who is fabulous and looks amazing and is very active on social media. She said her issue was the lack of progressiveness. Now, a lot of people have made their commentary because the show has not premiered as of today, but it'll be out this weekend. And off the trailer, they were saying this doesn't look like they were hoping that the Evans family got out the hood in the new millennium, right? But Bernadette Stannis, of course, who starred in the original 70s sitcom, mentioned that the fans are disappointed, as along with her and John Amos, who played the father figure, of course, James Evans, with the animated reboot, they're not that excited about it because it's perceived as not progressive. We're still living in the hood and you've got different types of characters on there that are not really representative of what they would hope to the message would relay now for people. So the reboot, it's been criticized for not maintaining the essence of the original series. And they say it has little in common with the original series other than the family's name and the setting of them being in the projects. The negative stereotypes was another issue that I read about. There's a concern that the new series promotes these negative stereotypes and does not honor the image of the original show, which, if you know anything about Esther Rolle, the late, great Esther Rolle, who played the mother,
Florida.
Yes, she was very adamant about not doing the show unless she had a husband for her children. She was not interested in playing a single mother living in the projects. So that was the whole reason why it started out as a family show that was about family getting to the next level together. Mm. Also, controversial content. Now, because I have not seen any of the show, just the trailer, apparently the animated series is said to include elements like violence and alcohol abuse, which some viewers feel could damage the legacy of the show, even though those topics were dealt with during the show, if you've ever watched Good Times. And, you know, John Amos, he expressed some skepticism. He didn't say too much about it because he hasn't seen it. But he said the reboot basically is not reaching the high standards set by the original cast in terms of entertainment and education. So I think the major criticism was that they were hoping that the new series will be a little bit more intellectually stimulating, a little bit more of a story of progression and, you know, what happens when you make it over, but they looked like they haven't made it over. So that's contributing to the lack of excitement for a lot of people and the critical reception. So we'll see, though. I do plan to watch at least the first couple episodes to see what they're talking about and what it's looking like. I definitely want to support it because I do like the actors involved in it.
Yeah.
But I do understand the criticism as well.
Yeah. You know, there's I'm going to be very honest. I've ever in my life, I've only ever seen one episode of Good Times.
What?
Damn.
You mean what?
Well, you know, okay. So first off, I really wasn't. I was, you know, playing guitar. I was, you know, playing football. I was one of those kids that was outside. Also, Good Times went off the air before I was born. So a while before.
Well, I think us too, but you know,
yeah, but it was reruns. I get that. But you know, it just wasn't a thing, you know. And then, you know, I was aware of it, you know, JJ, and you know, like I was aware of Good Times, but I just never sat and watched it. It just wasn't on at the times when I was growing up. So I ended up as an adult watching an episode of Good Times and just taking it in. I didn't know I would ever have this conversation today, of course, but when I took it in, I was like, oh, I get it. And maybe fortunately or whatever, maybe it was divine, you know, alignment, or maybe this was how the show went. But the episode I ended up watching, I remember the youngest kid, the little boy.
Michael. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he had like his afro or whatever. He like didn't want to apologize to a teacher for something. They were teaching something that was factually wrong at school, and the truth is that it you know, he was like super on his black power and whatever, and I was like,
the militant one, that's what they called him.
He was Michael. Like, okay, I get it, you know. And then you could see how these different characters in the program served to represent different facets of black life. And that's something that I liked later in the cartoon show, The Boondocks, which shout out to my sister, Yamara Taylor, who was a writer of that show. She turned me on to that really early. You know, in terms of this show, you know, and just like you, I've only seen the trailer, but it just didn't really feel like that sort of. Maybe that episode was particularly political in nature, but it didn't feel like what I had gotten from my one episode. It felt like if you didn't tell me it was a Good Times reboot, I would have thought it was a Bebe's Kids reboot, right?
Yeah.
And yep, I don't know if everybody's familiar with Bebe's Kids, but please check out Bebe's Kids and then you'll see what I'm talking about. It just looked like, you know, just people just doing their thing. You know, there was no informative like this strong quality backbone to the show. It felt like where can we get the easiest laughs? Where can we get things that all black people are able to laugh at and just kind of know that this is some black stuff, right? And so it wasn't looking toward an optimistic outcome as much as it was, okay, where are the laughs? Let's try to find them, you know, right here at this level. And I don't know that that's bad. And I don't know that that's going to be a theme throughout the show. Indeed, John Amos, who portrayed the patriarch, James Evans on the first three seasons, and Bernadette Stannis, again, known for playing Thelma, the middle child to James and Florida Evans, who was played by Esther Rowley, throughout the series, you know, their reactions to the trailer made it clear that they were reserving full judgment until they were able to watch the show. And it sounds like we're all kind of in agreement with them. So it is a little scary. It's like, oh, I hope you stick the landing because that looks a little complicated. But, you know, we'll wait and see. And hopefully it's not insulting. And I wouldn't blame the actors. I wouldn't blame the voice actors or anything like that. You know, there are just some writers that might feel like, who knows? And maybe they're black writers there and maybe they're trying to get numbers. And I think that a lot of us really have to play that game. Do we sell our people out? Do we sell our souls out to get the numbers? I know artists that feel that way. I know you know, musicians that feel that way. I know people that are in the creative space that feel that way. It's like, look, I got to go after the numbers. I got to appeal to the lowest common denominator. And that compromises what I would really like to put out there. And there's only been a handful of people in history who've been able to walk that line, i.e. the folks from Good Times, you know, because this was a successful show in its day, you know, Bill Cosby. I know, but the show that he created did not compromise the view of the Black family, and it was a successful show. You know what I mean?
And it's timeless today. You can watch episodes and it's relatable.
So you see the point I'm trying to make. So again, I think that we're all in agreement. We're going to reserve judgment until we see it, but that doesn't stop Black Twitter from letting off as
nothing stops Black Twitter.
There you go. So we'll leave it right there. I'd like to thank you as always very much for your time and your insight. Once again, today's guests are Black Information Network news anchors Morgan Wood and Bree Wood. This has been a production of the Black Information Network. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. Have some thoughts you'd like to share? Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I am your host, Ramses Ja, on all social media, and I'll be hosting another episode of Civic Cypher this weekend on a station near you. For stations, show times, and podcast info, check civiccypher.com. And join us Monday as we share our news with our voice from our perspective, right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.